Synod, we now come to item 14 on order paper 3, the Archbishop's Council's annual report. You will need GS2040 for this item. I would like to introduce Mrs. Mary Chapman and Mr. Philip Fletcher, who will make the presentation. They will speak for up to 20 minutes. I'd like to point out that the Business Committee has decided under Standing Order 107, 3 in brackets, that this presentation should not include an opportunity for asking questions. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, Synod. I'm hoping that Philip and I might be something of the aperitif or appetizer to the main meal of this evening's business, which is, of course, the consideration of the Council's budget for 2017. We'd like to give you a backdrop based on the annual report for last year. This is the first annual report of the Archbishop's Council during this quinquennium. So our presentation aims to give newer synod members a flavour of the composition, purpose, and work of the council. I hope that those of you, and I know there are some, whose synod membership and service predates the formation of the council, will please bear with me during that. We also want to create a bridge between the work reflected in the annual report for 2015 and what will come in the budget. So first of all, who are we? Chaired by our presidents, the two archbishops, the council is a unique church institution in terms of its very strong representation from General Synod through the elected officers of Synod, who sit ex officio, and six further members directly elected from and by the three houses. The presence of the First Estates Commissioner is a reflection of the Council's vital relationship with the Church Commissioners in bringing together consideration of policy and resources. Completing the team are the six appointed members, selected, as Archbishop Santamu said yesterday, to bring the greatest possible diversity of experience, skills, and perspectives. While we are all trustees for the Council, and therefore not representatives, there is no doubt that we hear the voice of the Church of England through the Synod members. The Council was born following a major report on the theme of working as one body, and from that came the statutory object expressed in the National Institution measure which established the Council. I've always rather liked the emphasis in this phrase, this object, on serving the furtherance of the Church's mission. Since the beginning of the last quinquennium, we have set our priorities and organised our work to align with the three priorities agreed by General Synod. The Council's ongoing responsibilities are broad-ranging, and the priorities have given a valuable way of focusing our efforts. We have committed to doing those things which can only or can best be done at national level in support of dioceses and the wider Church of England. It is in homes and schools and workplaces, in parishes and on the streets that the mission is carried out. Our role is to support those closest to the front line. The 2015 annual report sets out how we fulfilled that commitment last year. But before I go to specifics, I would like to express the appreciation and thanks of the Council, and I hope of Synod too, for the faithful, intelligent, diligent, and creative work of the staff team. We are truly blessed. As I said, the Council's responsibilities are broad-ranging. Renewal and reform has been the leitmotif for important programmes of work based on the three priorities of the quinquennium. Last year might be described as one of coordination, consultation, and communication. The linkages between the various task groups were made more evident. Members of council and staff attended meetings of diocesan synods, bishops' councils, theological educational institutions, and finance forums to consult widely across the church and to listen to ideas which have helped to reshape the programmes. Synod has debated and agreed new programmes, new funding arrangements, and legislative changes. As we now move towards implementation, the need for a shared vision and narrative to guide further work was imperative, and Synod has debated that today. Increasingly, the Council asks itself the question, how will this piece of work contribute to renewal and reform? Or put in another way, how will this contribute to building God's kingdom? Interwoven with the desire for renewal is the searching question of how we can best develop a culture and practice that promotes the safety and well-being of all in all the church communities. During 2015, the National Safeguarding Team was established to work closely with dioceses to establish a whole church approach to safeguarding. The pilot stage of the quality assurance process was completed and is being rolled out during this year. At the same time, the team has started important and onerous preparatory work for the Goddard Inquiry into Sexual Abuse. Towards the end of last year, the Council started to review its relationships with a range of organisations where it has governance responsibilities or to which it grants funds. As we pick up momentum with renewal and reform, we must waste no opportunity to build partnerships with those where there is a strong alignment of goals. Before Philip highlights some of the key projects and programmes of 2015, it may be helpful to give a brief financial overview. In terms of funding, you can see here that the two main income streams are the funds made available by the church commissioners, which are distributed to dioceses, and the funds that come through the diocesan apportionment, about which John Spence will speak in much more detail. From time to time, there are also significant funds from other sources, last year from the government in honour of the First World War centenary. Of the total funds that the council has at its disposal, almost two-thirds was spent on selecting and resourcing for public ministry. The largest proportion, 35 million, of that was distributed to the 25 dioceses having below average resources, and a further 13 million in training for ministry grants. Synod has been closely involved in the review of the methods by which the money made available by the church commissioners is distributed, agreeing the new system that will direct half of the available funds more accurately to the poorest communities and make half available as development funding with a focus for the poor. The examples of projects that have already started under the existing and much smaller fund demonstrate how the new arrangements open up great opportunities for new ventures and exciting and more intensive work to support growth. We need to move faster. The Council is now preparing for the full implementation of these arrangements from 2017. Peer reviewers have been selected and are being trained, and considerable thought is being given to the criteria and evidence that will enable us to demonstrate the impact of the funding. At this point, I would particularly like to express the gratitude of the Archbishop's Council for their partnership to the Church Commissioners for their partnership and cooperation in making these changes possible. The discussions between the Council and the Board of the Commissioners have been full and detailed, and the process has enabled significant improvements to be made in how the money is spent and how we assess its effectiveness. Excuse me. The commissioners are rightly and properly concerned that the income they generate on behalf of the church is spent to best effect, and the council will want to work with dioceses to assure ourselves and the commissioners on this. The commissioners have made it possible to move straight to the new arrangements next year by providing an additional sum of up to £72 million over 10 years to ease the transition for those dioceses which will experience the greatest change. This is excellent news, and we are very grateful to them for making the sum available. Now I'd like to pass the baton to Philip.
Good evening, Synod. Those of you who have sunk as low as me and actually enjoy the life of Brian will remember the joke where the People's Liberation Front start asking the question, what have the Romans ever done for us? And after they've ticked off the aqueducts, the roads, the legal system, etc., etc., they begin to run out of steam. Well, my endeavour, very briefly, is to set in front of you a few examples of what the Archbishop's Council does for us collectively, for the Church and people of England. And I stress already, as Mary has already done, almost all of this is in partnership with others. So the first example, you'll find more on all of these in the annual report, the First World War Centenary Cathedrals Repair Fund, £40 million over a four-year period, thanks here to partnerships with the government itself, which has provided the resource, to the Church Buildings Council, the Cathedrals Fabric Commission, which ensures that it's all properly allocated, properly spent, and the individual cathedral. And if we extended this to the Church Roof Fund, parish authorities, that makes sure that we're actually gaining advantage and putting our heritage in good condition. Next set of examples, two on this one, both related to the common good. On the left-hand side, the pilgrimage to Paris, initiative by the environmental group, working group, which we, the General Synod, established, working with others, and you'll see Christian Aid's flag for good reason in the background of that photograph taken on the steps of St. Martin in the Fields in Trafalgar Square, the setting off of the pilgrimage to Paris, a faith pilgrimage, not just the C of E, with Roman Catholics and others, to emphasise to governments gathering in Paris just how vital that climate change agreement was. And I've heard many people say it's the faith element that really brought home to governments how important this was. Right-hand side, and we all know this is the initiative of Archbishop Justin and his task group on responsible credit and savings. One of the outcomes of that initiative, the Church's Mutual Credit Union, started last year with the Methodist Church. Today, the URC came in the autumn, the Roman Catholics will be in. So that's very much an ecumenical initiative to ensure that we all take management of money seriously. And I could add the Church's Credit Champions Network and Savings Club programs in schools. Learn to manage money when you're still at primary school. That's when it really gets through. Next one, the occasional offices. Hallowed by tradition, that title hardly sets the blood racing. The Church, through the occasional offices, has 500,000 contacts a week with the people of England. It's one of our big links with the 18 to 45 age group. I don't really need to say this to vicars present, but we've used one-off legacy money to help those vicars and other ministers in the vital role of providing first-class services to the people of England with minimal administrative hassle. If in doubt, three new websites, weddings, funerals, christenings, which is the word that everybody except us tends to use for baptisms, or what they think of as baptisms. Production of really good materials, some of that's available for anyone who wants it, and also some sound research showing what really hits the button with the people we're talking to when it comes to those occasional offices. Communications, new media, the development of our website, the huge Lord's Prayer initiative in November last year, 5 million hits. It was a very good little video, but it really got those hits because the cinema chain declined to show it when we were willing to pay them money. The Just Pray website, backed by the All Churches Trust. The blogs, the podcasts, the 50 new videos that have appeared, the new website to come. There's a lot still to come around this. Now, ministry and vocation, at the heart of the Archbishop's Council's work. I won't spoil it because that will be a big feature of the budget debate to come. But I want to give a couple of examples of what we're trying to develop. The C of E Ministerial Experience Scheme to give 18 to 29-year-olds a real experience of what it's like to be a priest in the Church of England when they're thinking around vocation, no commitment. And it's not just ordination, though I thought I'd include that lovely photograph from Newcastle. The work on lay leadership and ministry, which we heard about at the House of Laity yesterday, is all part of this. Getting what might be called the nuts and bolts right. CGSMISC 1138, which gives you information about the giving state of the Church of England, how we can be more efficient. There's also the parish buying scheme. 4 million savings in 2015. The latest research suggests that a third of us, our parishes, have used it. 40% are thinking about it. 20% haven't heard of it yet. Well, if you want good products at a really competitive price that deploys our commercial muscle, please find out if you haven't already done so. There's the parish giving scheme, and I won't delay us on that one. Every treasurer knows how important gift aid is. Many of us know how tedious it is sometimes to get the gift aid right, to make sure we've got the trail for the revenue. Well, we can help from the centre with that, if it's a bore. And my final point, just to underline again, this isn't, of course, the Archbishop's Council working on its own. It's all of us working together with a host of partners, some of whom I have named in that slide. And just because of space, I haven't mentioned there, as I should, the Pensions Board, the National Society, Deanery Synods, you can go on naming them, and I'm very aware, as the Council is, and grateful to them. A catalyst is what we hope the Archbishop's Council can continue to be for Christian service by and for the Church of England. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Chapman and Mr. Fletcher. That brings us to the end of this item of business.